United States of Lead is an informative podcast that may contain sensitive material and the occasional F-bomb. Listener discretion is advised. Welcome to United States of Lead, a podcast about the history of lead poisoning and lead poisoning awareness. Today, I am joined by Eric Ritter, who is the founder and I guess I can say CEO of SCTUS, which is this amazing lead poisoning testing company. You explain yourself because I'm doing a terrible job.
Sure. Like you said, my name is Eric Ritter and SCTUS is really, I don't even know how to pronounce it, to be honest. It's a Latin word.
I was going to ask you.
Which means to know or understand something. And so made this, it's a DBA for my main company, which is called Spirekeet Research Labs. And we make consumer products. And the first thing I ever made was a reagent test kit. And it wasn't for lead, but I used the SCTUS or SCTUS imprint for that because it was the same idea. Reagent is something that you take chemicals, you react them with unknown chemicals, and it causes a color change. And that's how you determine what you have when you don't know it.
Okay.
And, you know, I was selling reagents for something else. Then I turned to lead because I saw this is a even better opportunity and I could, you know, go forward with this. And that's how it started, you know, with the reagent testing is I was familiar with it and I knew that I could make it at a really drastically reduced cost because at the time 3M's lead check product was the really only viable lead testing consumer product that existed.
Yeah.
But it was so overpriced. $5 per swab is prohibitive. And the technology inside the swab was really over-engineered for the sole reason of being patentable. And it worked for 20 plus years. Nobody really made any effort to make anything to compete with it.
It's kind of shocking.
It is. But at the same time, like, I think chemicals are kind of like a big barrier to entry for a lot of people because who knows, like chemistry, like it's so, like everybody does chemistry. Like if you ever baked a cake, you're doing chemistry.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
But that's, it's just when you talk about what's a reagent, who would be even interested in this? And like for a long time, I didn't think that there was much, you know, I knew that there was a static demand on Amazon for lead testing kits. First of all, I didn't understand why the people would buy them. And then once I understood that, which is after like fielding all these customer service calls, people would say, my child has been poisoned. He's got a high blood lead level. And now I'm trying to find the source. And then I would be like, okay. And then think to myself, wow, their kid was the initial test.
Yeah.
Not my test kit. Like they could have very easily.
Yeah. It's not preventative. This is reactionary buying because of it already happening. Yeah.
Yeah. And like, I mean, I'm sorry. Like I wish I could have given them a test kit sooner and then they would have not had this issue. And they could have just said, oh, okay, we have a potential problem. We have to be careful of this. Instead of finding out that there already is a problem, that's stressful.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's part of, you know, the fact that we don't have, and not just here in the United States, but globally, adequate understanding of just how prevalent it is. You know, people really do believe that it's not a thing, that it's in the past and it's not here. And that's obviously part of the frustration that caused this podcast to start.
Yeah.
So as far as, okay, so you made this product, right? And so like, is that kind of where like the onion started peeling back of like, was it bigger than you realized because of all of this influx of understanding through people writing in the comments and reviews and stuff like that?
I really didn't think that much of it. You know, like this was in 2019 when I made this. Like I didn't,
okay.
Know, I'm 32. I'm 31 now. So I was like 26 or something at the time. And so I didn't know that much about stuff. It actually, I really chalk it up to this guy from Columbia University, Lex Van Geen. He is a geochemist, and he had tried to make a consumer product to test soil for lead. He tried to get a grant. The way that researchers go about things is very specific because they exist in a specific context.
Yeah.
And so they only operate within the confines of that context. And if anything is happening outside of that, they tend to disregard it. Mm-hmm. And that's just how it is. I would disregard stuff too if it was completely alien to me.
Yeah.
And I tend to sometimes. Mm-hmm. So he was trying to get this, you know, government funding for this project. And then he contacted me and I said, I would love to meet with you. This sounds awesome. Mm-hmm. And so we met up. And then, I mean, he's not a lead expert per se, but he's a geochemistry expert. And he's done a ton of work with citizen science and reagent testing specifically.
Okay.
Even for things like arsenic and other, you know, deploying the technology into countries like India or Africa. So, you know, speaking with him, doing some more testing. And then, I mean, once I found out about the glowing lead test.
Yeah.
Because the swabs are not exciting.
It's well, the other thing about the swabs is you have to actually like break, like, so if you wanted to test a plate, like you have to break the plate open. Like you can't just test like the surface of it and get the result.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Then,
yeah. I mean, you may have to break the plate open, but you at least would have to. I mean, I've always said, if you want to test ceramics for lead, take a little bit of vinegar, drip it onto the plate, draw a circle around it with pencil, and then just leave it for as long as it takes to evaporate. And the acetic acid will leach out some of the lead onto the surface, and you could test that spot with the swab.
Oh, for sure. But like if you were getting one of those 3Ms, like they're not telling you that. You know, that's what I mean. So it's like the actual like way of doing it that is effective and efficient has never been really promoted.
Well, because it's
you know what I mean?
Because that product was made in response to Title 10. Title 10 was the 1992 law, which determined the legal limit for lead-based paint and prescribed a protocol for detecting it proactively in many cases. And for all federally funded housing there, which is considered target housing, which is a place where children may live now or in the future. So these are single family residences, multifamily housing units. There's like a plan to detect all the lead in those places. And then if there is lead that's over the limit, it is paid for by the government to abate it. And so the issue with lead paint really is that it's a huge problem. Is there so many in 1992, there was like 75 million homes with lead based paint. Now, I think this is from like 2016. There's 34 million homes with lead based paint still. So there's just so much of it that the government doing this, setting this limit, you know, making rules for how people have to renovate. If they renovate over 6 square feet inside, they have to follow the RRP rule, which is
supposed
like, you know, supposed to, yeah.
I was going
to
say, that's not being enforced.
Yeah, it's not being enforced. The EPA doesn't have guns and they don't have cars rolling around investigating this. It's like kind of an unenforceable rule.
Yeah.
But like on the aggregate, they're decreasing lead poisoning. And over time, lead poisoning will always decrease. Just as a function of dangerous situations going away, objects being thrown away, less lead-containing objects being made, no lead in the gas. That's a huge one. The lead pipe removal thing.
Commercial gas. It's still in planes, like the non-commercial planes and
stuff.
Well,
they do. You know, I think they're trying to phase out the...
But I don't think they have yet. Like, but that's just one of those things.
They have a plan to phase it out, which is like, you know, by 2030, there will be no more...
Many people think it's just not there anymore. You know what I mean? Because it's like, why would you think? Because you were told it was banned. So why would you think it's still?
I mean, but that was a huge step forward.
Absolutely.
Because in 1975, the amount of lead in a gallon of gas was like 2 grams of lead per gallon, which is an insane amount of lead. And, you know, every day, I think in 1980, they burned 250 million gallons of gas per day.
Yeah.
So it's like 500 million grams per day. mm-hmm. of lead going into the atmosphere. And that got everywhere. So now there's lead in every food article that we eat. There's like
the soil.
Nanograms of lead. The soil, so, yeah,
like,
exactly.
Going back to the soil, because like you said, I'm sure that the person that you talked to from Columbia probably knows Dr. Mark Laidlaw, who we interviewed, because they talk about the geotextiles. And they might actually be a part of that. I don't know if they have, you know, that background in that. But, you know, this geotextile you lay down, it buries it. And so only fresh soil goes on top. And then you mark it on a map. What did he say? You map it and then cap it. Or you cap it. No, sure. You cap it and then map it. So that there's this, like, you know, single source where we know, okay, this has been capped. This has been capped. And, like, that's the only way to really fix it, if you will. Because, like you were saying, you know, with, like, houses and the paint, and it's, like, all of that goes into the soil surrounding the house. So if you're just, like, getting the paint, you're redoing the windows, you still have to think about the parameter of the house and how that's also poisoned. And that's just things that we don't as a society think about. But that's why I got so excited. And we're going to have Tim Pye on again soon, because I know you sent him something that you are working on to release.
This is what Lex and I were working on, which mm-hmm. was the digestive method for testing the bioavailable lead in the soil. And his initial method involved taking the sample, weighing it, drying mm-hmm. it, sifting it, testing it, and then using sodium redisonate into a filtered version of the liquid. Okay. And that sounds like a lot. And I was like, this is way too much work. Nobody's
going to
do
this. When
you're
saying that, you know, do you have ever seen the meme of the woman where it's like all the math equations? Have you ever seen that meme where she's like staring? Every time you mention any... Because for listeners, I have done an introductory meeting with Eric before this. And like every time he talks about the actual chemistry, it's just my mind goes to that meme where I'm just like, I don't understand it, but I'm so glad you're sharing it because like it's really important.
And so when I was like, Lex, this is a crazy amount of work. Like this is, and this is probably overkill because who cares? It's not really isn't hard to detect lead in its most dangerous form. And like another thing, going back to those lead testing kits, they're not going to detect all the lead. Like you could easily have ceramics with 5,000 parts per million lead and no chemical test is going to pick that up. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, is that really so dangerous? Mm-hmm. Like, is it going to come off onto your hands? If you handle it, is it going to come off onto your food? If you scrape it with a knife and you eat some food, you cut it up on the thing. Mm-hmm, is it going to really get into your body? I'm not positive, but I'm going to find out.
Yeah.
And I think that's a really important thing to contextualize how dangerous these objects are. Because if something contains some lead, it may not be dangerous. I know the legal limit for child use items is 90. But if a child is handling an object and has 500 parts per million, I'm not sure if that's dangerous or not. Mm-hmm. Like, the main risk to that child remains paint, if they live in a home that has paint built before 1978, the water, if their water contains a lot of lead, if they're playing with some object that is teeming with lead so much that it comes off, or if they're playing in the soil.
Yeah, the soil.
Lead. Or if they're eating high lead foods. If you're feeding a kid a diet of cassava,
sweet potatoes,
wheat flour, sweet potatoes, and dark chocolate, they're going to get significant amounts of lead just from that.
Yeah.
And that object that they eat off of, like even these lead-containing baby bottles. Like I had one.
Oh, I saw that video, which also.
But like, I don't know if it comes off, you know?
Well, yeah. I mean, because that's something too. It's the wear, you know what I mean? And then like, so like we were saying too, with the ceramic, like if you chip it, that definitely increases the likelihood of exposure, you know? So it's things like
does,
that.
But there's still the aspect of lead only gets into our bodies for about an hour if we eat it. Because it only leaches out in an acidic environment. Mm-hmm. And the stomach will empty into the small intestine, which is really alkaline. It's like pH 11. So it goes from being like pH 1.5 hydrochloric acid in the stomach to pH 11 in the small intestine. So no more lead is going to get into your system once it gets into that small intestine. So
ingesting,
if you do it,
ingesting,
not inhalation.
Yeah.
If you do ingest something that has lead, it's really like going to get into you for an hour. So, like, if you eat a piece of ceramic, like a big chunk of ceramic.
Oh, I hope to God nobody's eating ceramic. I was saying leaching onto the food that they're eating.
Oh, yeah. If you have, like, a chip spot, you'll increase the surface area and it may get into two more. Yeah. And this is, I know I'm just going off randomly here, but I'm going to buy a graphite furnace atomic absorption spectrometer from Thermo Fisher. And it's really, this is, like, the best instrument to detect lead. You can detect lead down to parts per billion easily. And cool. I'm going to find out how much lead comes off of all the objects, like how much you would actually get if you were exposed. Because if you, let's say you have an item in your house, like, but if you have this much paint.
Yes, yes. A comparison,
that's,
yeah.
That's mm-hmm. where you're going to get, you know, what's more dangerous, like a Pyrex bowl with lead on it mm-hmm. or like this much paint. And I think that the primary places where people get poisoned are really paint, water, maybe soil. And the consumer products, you know, you probably get some lead exposure there, but.
You should look more into the soil because Mark was very assertive of saying that's actually the number one exposure is soil and that we're not actually paying attention to it.
It very
because
well
it's
may
the
be,
airborne but... inhalation that you 100% absorb. And mm-hmm. then ingestion, it's only like 40 to 60%, I think you actually absorb of the lead.
Sure. Yeah.
But yeah, I love the idea of you doing this for showing people the logical and rational, because we talked about that with Tim, how yes, lead is scary. And yes, we have it everywhere. And yes, we're exposed every day, but let's do the worst first. So there's this idea, like it's everywhere and that's scary, but like there are things that are more severe than other things. So let's bring it down a bit and like get to those worst first and then expand. So like you saying how like you're going to see what's the worst first is amazing because that's what we need to be doing.
Certainly. Yeah. And so if you test something with a swab or you test something with a glowing spray and it glows or it turns red, that's the worst. Mm-hmm. That object has so much lead on the surface that it's willing to react either with the sodium ridizonate or with the methylammonium bromide and create these colored complexes that are visible.
Yeah.
And that's super dangerous. Like that's definitely going to get on you if you handle it. If you ingest it, there's tons of lead in that. So that's why the 3M, they never advertise that it can detect in ceramics. Because at the end of the day, I don't want to like speak about other people's ideas. Mm-hmm. But the person who invented that 3M swab, did they really go forward and try to get rid of lead poisoning? They made an invention. They patented it.
Yeah.
And I don't even know if they would have been able to defend that patent in court. Nobody ever tried to fight them on that. Nobody ever made the same thing and said, listen, you really think that patent is legit? We're going to find out. And the patent people, like the laws surrounding patents,
yeah,
they allow for this kind of confrontation. There's a big case that happened, went to the Supreme Court, in fact. It's called KSR v. Teleflex. And it was about combining basically like a remote control or a remote control component to a throttle in a car. And a KSR or Teleflex, I don't remember who, was saying, we patented this. You can't make this. It never existed before. And the other party said, you can't patent that. It's obvious to somebody who is skilled in the art of doing this to combine those elements if they were motivated to have a throttle control unit that was remote control. Like, it's not an invention. It's just an assimilation of objects that hasn't been done before, but it can't be patentable. So, like, is the 3M LeadCheck swab with the two crushable ampules something that never existed before? Yes. But did everybody ostensibly know that sodium ridizonate degrades quickly in liquids and that putting it in an ampule form and then crushing it and then swabbing it would be good? You know, this would cost a lot of money. It's a lot of risk. What if you lose the case? So in business, there's a lot of, you know, risk with anything. Mm-hmm. And when patents come into play, it ups the risk factor. Because if you're wrong and you say this, it's going to be terrible.
Yeah.
You just wasted all this money, and now you're going to have to pay additional money to the people who have the patent. So when she made that patent, she then sold the product for like about like maybe like 15 years or so, then sold it to 3M when her husband passed away. And it was her and her husband who made the company.
Aww.
And they sold, so then they sold it to, she sold it to 3M, and then that was it. And then 3M bought it. You know, they got actually part of that ETV program. Kind of weird, actually. Right when 3M purchased the patent, remaining patent, which had about 10 years left on it for the lead check, the EPA opened a program where they funded the testing of these chemical tests to see if they would be allowed to detect lead-based paint. And they tested the 3M lead check, the state of Massachusetts sodium sulfide test, and then another test that's based on sulfur, which is called D-lead. And they found that all of these tests detected it successfully 95% of the time if there was lead, but they all had like a false positive reading of like 95%. And that's not because they were detecting lead when there was no lead. It was because they were detecting lead, but it was below the limit. So right after they did this, they immediately, the EPA immediately changed the rules basically barring any more chemical tests from being able to be made, because they made it so you also need to meet the negative criteria, which if it's below 4,000 parts per million, it has to be negative 95% of the time.
Mm-hmm.
But the swabs and the chemicals, they detect down to about 500 parts per million, which is, this is really interesting too. On the lead paint history, lead paint was first regulated in 1973. Or in the early 70s. I think it was 1971, but then they really put it into effect. 1973, there was a law. And the law said that if the paint is made before the end of 1974, the limit is 5,000 parts per million. If the paint is made after 1974, the limit is 500, or it was 600 parts per million. And then that 600 parts per million lead-based paint definition stuck all the way until 1988, when they started to think about how can we detect this in all the places that have it proactively. Mm-hmm. And the way that they devised to detect it was the XRF gun. And the XRF gun sucked in 1988. Yeah. It was so rudimentary. It used radioactive material, normally like a cadmium radioactive isotope, inside of a chamber that was probably lined with lead and had a shutter.
All the wonderful things just in there.
But I mean, lead is effective. Lead is actually a really effective.
So is cadmium. We always joke they're the best friends. Like they're both like BFFs.
They have uses. They don't belong in our bodies. That's what it comes down to. Like if we didn't have nervous systems, we were computers.
Yeah.
We would have lead roofs everywhere. Everyone would have a lead roof. And you would never have to get a new roof.
Don't promote that.
I'm not promoting it. Yeah. Actually, lead roofs are terrible. They, as a random aside, the fire, remember the fire, the Notre Dame Cathedral fire?
Oh, God, yeah.
That had a lead roof. And it increased the, there was like 1,000 kilograms of lead dispersed easily. And
I had
super
no
high,
idea.
Yeah, super high. And Lex actually wrote an article on this. And he said he got a lot of negative responses from people because it's not fun to say, hey, if you live there or you have some kind of interest, it's gonna, you're going to look bad. You know, to say, oh, now all the soil in the area is going to be 1,200 parts per million.
I never heard that about that fire.
Yeah.
Holy buckets. Yeah,
the whole roof was lead. But,
oh my God.
How old was that cathedral?
Well, exactly. That's why. Like, it wasn't like they just put a lead roof on it, you know?
Yeah.
Which
is a great roof. But it is dangerous because it, the like, acidic rain will cause leaching of the lead slowly, and that will get into the soil. And then if you have a fire, you'll obviously have vaporization of the lead. It's going to be catastrophic.
Well, the water's right there, too. The river's right there, like right off of it.
No, definitely. It's crazy. So anyway, so these XRF guns, they had the radioactive isotope. You would pull the trigger and a mechanical shutter would open, releasing the radiation. It would hit the paint. And X-rays are just like light, really shortwave light.
Mm-hmm.
So it's so shortwave that it goes right through like my arm, but then it's not skinny enough that it doesn't hit the calcium and phosphorus in my bones. So that's how you get an X-ray image. Mm-hmm. So these X-rays go in and they hit lead atoms in the paint and then they make them glow. And then that glowing X-ray light bounces back and it hits the detector window and then it knows how much lead there is. So in 1988, they updated the limit, or rather they updated the definition of what lead-based paint was. And they said that it was paint that contains 1 milligram of lead per square centimeter. And this was actually a pretty smart way to do it because it's really easy to have, like, let's say like a window that's this big. And when you shoot X-rays into it, the amount of glowing lead, it's easy to deduce how much lead you have. And even if it's overpainted, you can still detect it. And that's why XRF technology is great. But at the time, the limit was 5,000 that it could really detect. And even then, a lot of the time, they would get inconclusive results. So in 1992, when they were really like, okay, we're actually going to roll this out for real, they changed the rule to say 1 milligram per square centimeter or 5,000 parts per million. Because if you get an inconclusive result with an XRF gun, you have to scrape off 2 square inches of paint and then send it to a lab. And they will digest it and then run it through an atomic absorption spectrometer or some other high-tech solution like ICP-MS or ICP-OES.
Sorry, there's a bunch of different ones. I always insane clown posse. When you said ICP.
This one's like, even more insane. It stands for intrinsically contained plasma mass spectrometry or intrinsically contained plasma optical emission spectroscopy. And these are all really insanely high-tech ways to identify, you know, lead. Although I bet that insane clown posse could identify lead too.
They're going to revolutionize.
I hope so. I wish I could give them a glowing test.
I mean, I'm sure they would love it. Aren't they from Detroit, which is like super high in lead, so as far as like cities in the world? So maybe.
Yeah. Well, yeah. And I don't know. Yes.
But what I find fascinating is like you don't even have a background in science. Right?
Well, I mean,
like,
I have a background in science that I've loved science forever since I found out about black holes.
Yeah. Oh, dear. Don't get me started on that. But like,
well, that's what got me hooked.
Yeah. But that's what I mean is like people like limit themselves to like thinking of like where they can expand their lives. And like, that's what I like. You went to school for business, right?
Is that business, psychology, political science? It was like a multidisciplinary
psychology
studies.
Helps when it comes to this topic. But that's what I find so wonderful is that this didn't come from just, you know, like, I mean, obviously you need to have some business mindset to have the products, but you know so much because you care and like want to learn more. You know what I mean? You didn't just make this swap to make money. That's what I mean. It's like, it's like,
well,
this...
I did in the beginning. I'm not going to act like I didn't.
But like
in the beginning, I was like, this is a great way to make money. This other
super
big company is solely asleep at the wheel. This product sucks. It's overpriced for no reason.
Yeah.
I can get the same results. With this cheaper method. And then it just took the like bigger picture to become, you know, and it happened over time. Once I met Lex, I started getting more into it. I took the EPA class for the, once I started learning more, I started saying, wow, this is a really incompetently handled situation.
Mm-hmm.
But like they've done a lot, like the amount of lead poisoning has been going down for years. So from a bureaucratic policy standpoint, they're doing a great job. It's not going up, so they're doing a great job. But like from what I see, people aren't being served by it, and they can't expect to be served by the government in such a specific niche because the government isn't going to be able to do that. Like they actually did a pledge to spend $300 billion to get rid of all the lead pipes by 2030, which that's great.
My thing though, but if you're not even talking about the soil, I don't care. Like that's something where it's like you can't just put a band-aid on it. Like that's
true, but there's still here's the thing, they're still going to get a reduction year over year.
True.
And this, how much would the soil cost? So much. How much would the paint cost? So much. Like I could, the paint probably will cost at least $600 billion to $1 trillion. Soil, if you really want to remediate all the soil, that's going to probably cost more, and it's going to be like such a hassle. Like there's so much actual work that needs to be done for those. The lead pipe removal and replacement is a hassle, but it's not
more
necessarily
cost-effective.
It's just like more known. Yeah. Like there's already people who replace service lines all the time. Like
oh,
you
yeah,
have crews
absolutely.
That do that. Like there's no crew that's prepared to displace you from your home, fix all the paint, and then say, okay, you can move back in. That's going to be a really tough one. And so that's why I think that consumer products that detect lead are essential to solving that aspect of the problem. And they have to be low cost and they have to work really well. And they have to be fun to use at least a little bit, because this swab is not fun to use. Like I wish that this was fun, but it's just taking the swab out, dipping it in vinegar, and then rubbing it on the surface for 30 seconds and saying, is that lead or is it dirty? Like it works.
Yeah, yeah.
But like you need to be kind of like really committed to finding it in order to use this. But with the spray, it's like you literally just spray it, shine the flashlight on it. If it glows, you know.
Mm-hmm. And that's what actually I was like, meaning is like, because like you could have just stopped with these swabs and like, you know, been like, cool. But like you actually evolved it into now the spray and the soil testing, which is amazing because, again, we're a reactionary society. We're not preventative. But if we can get consumer pressure on brands that says, listen, this has clearly a lot of lead in it. What are you going to do about it? You know, because it's like there is this gatekeeping to like knowing what does and doesn't. And, you know, like we said with the swabs, like that, sure, it can test, but it's kind of limited to what it can test and how, you know, knowing just how much is in it. But that's where I think, because it's like at the end of the day, we got to know that like almost everything we buy has lead in it at this point. And it's kind of crazy that you just got to slap that prop California sticker on it, whatever prop 69 or 67.
65,
is it?
I think.
65. I was close in the 60s. And, but like that, you just have to slap a sticker on it and it's fine. You know, like that kind of stuff where it's like, that's the part to me, because it's like, okay, sure, now it's whatever. But when these products are going to the landfills and climate change and the wind's going to pick up and like all that soil is going to be even more polluted. Like these are things that we're not even thinking about because it hasn't happened. But why should we wait till it happens to, like, take care of it, I guess, is really...
Yeah, and, like, I bet you that even though this isn't necessarily, like, this Yeti has lead in the bottom, although I wasn't able to get the bottom off, you know, I don't think that they're going to continue to make lead-containing bottles. Like, there's been so much outrage from the consumers that I'm sure it's not even hard. Bismuth is basically lead.
Yeah, Tim introduced me to bismuth, and I love bismuth. I think it's amazing because it looks so futuristic. When he brought up that, I was like, what the fuck? Well, it's the same with ammunition. You know, we can make copper bullets. Yeah. We don't need to make lead bullets. You know, like, it's things like that where, like, there's just all of these things where it's like, other than cheapness, other than the cost, and it's saving the people making the money more money, other than that excuse, that's the only limitation we have to actually, like, using that. So bismuth you can use instead of lead in the cups, you said?
Yeah, as far as the ceiling dot, like, it has a really low melting point. And I think that's what they're going for with those ceiling dots, is just a low melting point solder, basically. So they can, because the way they must make them is that, I don't know how they exactly do it, but the inside of this cup has a vacuum in it. And then the hole that they use to extract all the air out of, there must be a vacuum around the outside of the hole. And then they put this molten metal into the spot where the hole is, and then they let it harden, and then they can release the vacuum, reintroduce air to the outside, take it out, and put this bottom on, and then it's done in the inside of the vacuum. And they actually really do work great. They keep the drinks cold forever.
Yeah.
So they're super, it's a super good innovation, but they want something that is liquid and then gets hard fast, and, you know, there's, like, no strain on it once it's hard, you know, they're going to cap it. So it's fine. So they just need something that'll harden fast and will shore up the hole. And now they could do that through a multitude of different ways. But they just, the easiest way is just to find a low melting point alloy. And lead is one of those things. And it's not illegal to put lead in products that have inaccessible components.
Yes. Yeah.
And it's not even illegal to put lead in accessible components of products that are not intended for use by kids.
Yeah.
So, you know, they just kind of let it go, you know. But the number of people who got poisoned by a Stanley or a Yeti, maybe I could count on my finger. You know, like, it probably isn't that many people. And so, like, what we were saying before, like, the take care of the worst first.
Yes, yes.
You know, and so that's probably, you know, paint, soil, water, if you have it in your water, and then your diet if it contains a lot of lead. Because low-level lead poisoning will cause a lot of problems for people. And one more thing about the paint, what I was saying about the paint before, I just want to get back to this.
Yeah.
I think it's so important because if you have, like, lead-based paint, so, like, so that was a great move. In 1992, Title 10, that was a great move initially. It was proactive. But there's a huge drawback, which is that it's 30 years later, the limit is still 5,000. And the XRF guns can detect way below 5,000. A limit of detection for my unit is 12 parts per million. And it was made in 2017. And so, like, they can detect it. And I was at the EPA conference in November, and they said, the XRF people were like, yeah, we can detect down to 500 parts per million for sure, if you want to lower the limit. And the EPA guys, you know, the policy guys were like, no, no.
Of course.
We're not going to change that. I don't think there's any indication that we need to change that. Because the indication would be that they instantaneously would have to spend a lot more money. And that's a big ask for the EPA, because all the EPA does is cost the government money. And all they do is cost businesses money. So nobody likes the EPA, except for us. And there's so much, like, you know, people with a big coal-powered diesel truck, you know, would be like, oh, the EPA, they suck.
Yeah.
But, like, EPA is great. The EPA is the only thing that protects us at all from complete contamination. Like, they ban PCBs. They're, you know, going to probably ban PFAS and a lot of stuff. And these are not healthy chemicals. You know, they banned CFCs. They banned all kinds of stuff that sucks for the environment. And people would make and sell this stuff if they were allowed.
That's the thing that people don't realize, like, how much worse it would be if they were allowed to do it. Oh, my God. It's so wild. So your spray, that's something, I mean, it's trending. I'm loving seeing how many views it's getting. It's so exciting. It's not available for sale yet, but can you tell people where they can go to get on the mailing list for when it is ready.
I mean, if they want my specific one, the one I've been using, which will have this top or spray top, they can just go to detectled.com and just drop their email, and I'll email them when I can sell it. But I have a batch of like 500 of the Lumetalics brand, okay. And that was made by the people who came up with this.
Yeah.
You know, but theirs has, you know, a different amount of spray, stuff like that. Mm-hmm. I didn't design that test kit. You know, I can talk about, you know, the way, so the real big evolution for me was finding out that this test kit exists, or this method for detecting lead exists.
And I found didn't know until you told me.
Yeah. And who would know? Because, you know, Lex told me about, oh, these are the people, you know, they want to meet up with you. You know, he's coming here. We can talk to him. So I said, okay. So I Googled his name. I found out that he was a solar cell researcher from the Netherlands, and that they had, in 2018, been him and the other guy who owns Lumetalics were part of a research paper, I think it was called Holtis et al., where they did something pretty interesting, actually. They took calcium carbonate-bearing materials, like a seashell has calcium carbonate, and they exposed it to lead nitrate, and the lead nitrate removed the calcium and inserted the lead. So now you had a lead-containing seashell. They made the liquid, the same liquid that's in these bottles, and they put it onto the seashell. Mm-hmm. And then it converted it to glowing lead seashell.
Yeah, and this is like, you know, when you see in like an old sci-fi radioactive materials, like type of looking green, you know what I mean? Like it's like, or it's Slimer.
For sure.
Slimer, yes. Ghostbuster, like that's the kind of color that comes from this.
It's gross looking. I mean, it's mesmerizing, but it does not look safe.
Well, it definitely doesn't look safe, but it definitely at least shows you very specifically, unlike the swabs, it's like, this is toxic.
Yeah. Yeah, you would, because that mineral doesn't exist in nature. It's called a lead halide perovskite. I don't know how to say it exactly. It's a very weird, I think it's like a Russian word. But it's basically just a mineral that contains the lead or another metal in the center of like a box structure, basically. And they make these tiny nanocrystals. Sometimes they're referred to as quantum dots. And they reflect light through the crystal, and it's a semiconducting material, so it kind of changes the wavelength of the light when it comes out. And that's why they're useful in solar cells. And their goal in that paper, that research paper, was to basically make components of solar cells first with calcium carbonate, and then convert it to lead carbonate, and then convert it to the lead halide perovskite using this chemical or using another method. And then they went on to file a patent on the same thing for, you know, a test kit that basically does the same thing. But it's public. You can look this up too. It's called a method for detecting lead. And it's like an international patent. And they got some preliminary information that wasn't going to be admissible for a variety of reasons. Most of them are that it's obvious, or that it's some of the components aren't invented. But the same thing is true. And this is, I'm not going to let this happen with the same thing with the 3M thing, the lead check. Like, who does it serve to have a patent?
Mm-hmm.
Like, I understand that patents are important, because why would I ever get out of bed to do any innovation if somebody else could just knock it off and I spent all this money to do it? But, you know, it's not, this isn't the use for that. Like, this isn't that.
Well,
this
it's is the just difference of like a patent on something that is meant to help save people versus a patent on something that's like, I don't know.
A scrub daddy.
Sure. What is
it's kind
that?
Of like it's scrub daddy. You don't know what
I
that
have
is?
No
it's
idea. Like
a,
no, I do.
It's
not.
Like a smiley face brush that you use in your sink.
Okay, never and heard it, that term.
Well,
before.
it's a patented a thing, but it's like you
oh,
know,
of course
I don't think
that has a patent on it.
Yeah. But you know, then again, same thing. Nobody's probably ever made a scrub daddy and said your patent sucks.
Yeah. ShamWow, I'm sure. That one, I just thought of ShamWow. I'm sure there's a patent on ShamWow.
Patents are mostly just for scaring people away. Like, I have a patent pending on mine, too.
Yeah.
But, like, you know, it's on specific components that I think make the thing better. It's on a non-toxic reference sample. Like, you know, I mean, these aren't necessarily whatever, you know. And I don't even know if, like, to be honest, the lead detection thing, it's kind of almost like insulin in a way. Like, it
that's
really
what
is
I mean.
Important.
Yeah. Like, there's certain things where it's like the patent, like, if it's to save lives, there shouldn't be a gatekeeper as to how that can be shared.
Yeah. I think that's, so. Yeah. And the people who made the insulin, there was like three people or so on it.
Yeah.
Two of them were like, no, we got to patent this. We got to patent. And the third guy was like, you guys suck. We're not patenting this. This is like, we shouldn't patent this. We should make it so everybody can get access to it. Because if you don't have insulin, you have type 1 diabetes. You're going to die.
Yeah.
There's no avoiding that. So, and they did the right thing with that. And so.
Well, and they promised, they tried to demand that like this price will never go above this. And like, we're told, yeah, sure, we won't do that. And then it's like, what happened? People can't afford their insulin now. Like that worldwide, but specifically here, that should just not be allowed at all to price gouge people to save their lives. That's insane.
Yeah, it is insane. I think it's really a bummer when that happens. But that happens all the time.
Oh God, yeah.
You know, yeah. But we got, it's a very difficult topic to navigate. But I hope that, I mean, it's not like you can't make this. Like anyone can make this. If they get in the US, if they go get a DEA registration, they could buy methyl ammonium bromide and they can make it into a product. Please don't try this at home. Oh, the methyl ammonium bromide is actually safe, but what I'm going to be doing is I'm going to be taking methylamine and hydrobromic acid and combining them so I can make a much cheaper source of methyl ammonium bromide. So I can enable whomever, wherever to make this for like virtually no startup cost. And that's what's great about what I experienced on Amazon was a very low startup cost to start doing business. When I made product, it didn't even look like this. It looked way worse. It was crazy looking.
It's like a Ziploc bag and just.
it could have literally been a Ziploc bag. It was just a longer tube. Like it didn't really, the cap didn't really stay on. I had to put a piece of like tape over it. But it was like, you know, it cost me like $1,000 to start. And I was like, all right, like, let me try this. And hey, like I sold like 150,000 units of this.
Yeah.
Like that's 150,000 people had the ability to find out what the hell was going on in their environment.
Yeah.
More than they would have otherwise.
Yes. Yeah.
And that's huge for them. You know, any person who's like, wow, I was about to sand this door that I bought. Or I was about to sand this, you know, my paint in my kitchen.
Yep, take up windows out. Yep.
Mm-hmm. Exactly, yeah. And like that's, you know, that's really valuable to understand. Like it's just, you know, there might be lead. Like it's 2023. Like there might be lead in stuff that's old. There might be lead in objects that are old. Or even some objects that are new.
I would say new. Go to the Dollar Tree. I'm sure that there's like a lot. Not even that. Target. I mean, I literally will look at and I forget to check for that sticker because at least like they have to notify you. But it's still kind of crazy to think that you have to check before buying it, whether or not. I mean, like even those mats that you bought, the car mats.
Yeah, that was crazy, you know, right?
I mean, but it's so common. We don't realize it's as common as it is, but like we said, not to scare people, but to more like, let's deal with the worst first and figure this out, you know? I would love if you would come on again because I feel like we have a lot more to discuss. But before we end, I want to plug, you're on Instagram and you will soon be on TikTok, but it's at Eric Everything Led, correct? Yeah. I got it right? Okay. And please, 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 please check out his videos because not only can you see the spray happening, which is amazing. And also I love that you're like running into all these places. Like I love
that. You have to go fast if you have lead to find.
It can really just like open people's eyes up to like just how amazing this product is. I don't think until you see it, you can't be like, oh my God. Like the first video you sent me where you were testing, I think it was like a Mickey Mouse glass or something. I don't remember.
That was the best one. I remember that. And it's freaky when you see it. Because it looks innocuous, but then when you spray it, you see that it's glowing and then you know it's dangerous.
But especially for parents, you know, like I said, like we're saying with products that kids are using. And sure, it just can't be marketed to kids. It can't say it's for kids, but it could still look like something for a kid, you know? So that's something where it's just letting parents see that. And again, like we were saying, like home renovations, that's so important. But please get on the mailing list at... I already forgot
detectlead.com.
Detectlead.com. Oh, and that's something I want. Didn't even get to the nose picking Alzheimer's. So let's talk about that next time because I'm seriously just this headline. It's just actually, let's just do it quick now because
sure.
That is something to me that is just so wild is like, I do social media for my career. It's my part of my actual job. But like, so I'm scrolling and scrolling and it's just nonstop. Alzheimer's linked to picking your nose. Don't pick your nose. It's causing Alzheimer's. I'm like, okay. Let's Google this. And then it's specific to this protein that gets produced because it's protecting your brain from foreign particles. And mm-hmm. that's not the part the headline says. So people are just thinking, like, because I'm inserting my finger into my nose, it's causing Alzheimer's, which is not actually the reason. And so that's
a lot easier for people to digest than saying you're disrupting the barrier for bacteria and it gets into your brain more easily if you are pulling out your nose hairs or you're picking your nose.
Yeah.
But who wants to? That's a lot of science. But I think that this is like kind of like, this is part of the reason why we have such a combined inability to function outside of our lane in the world, which I don't know if that's by design. It certainly does serve the people at the top.
Yeah.
Because like you don't want people who can do anything. You want people who can do one thing and then you pay them a moderate amount to do that. And then that's what they do.
That's what I meant when I said like you veering into this and the science and knowing so much. It's like society isn't structured for you to do that. You should have just like been over here and like stayed with this one. You know what I mean? Like that's.
Yeah. I just wasn't willing to accept that because that just seemed like a terrible
deal.
I was like, thank goodness. Yeah. And it's like, you know, it's great. I wish everybody did this. I mean, we'd have mass confusion because everybody would be like, what's going on? But I mean, a lot of people would be doing a lot of good stuff.
Yeah.
And that would be awesome. I think that a lot of jobs will get replaced with automation eventually anyway.
Yeah.
So if people aren't going wherever they want, you know, if there are people used to be, there used to be a popular job called an elevator operator. But if all I know how to do is operate an elevator and then they install a keypad in the elevator,
I don't exist
anymore. Mm-hmm. Like my job is gone. So like I better find something new to do. Mm-hmm. And so that's like random advice. Find as many things as you enjoy doing. Start doing them and enjoying learning about them. And
I believe we're in the age of that, though. Like, really expanding on all levels.
Yeah.
But yeah, with that headline, like, that's the thing I want to say because it's just so misleading because one of the foreign particles that your brain creates this protein for is lead. And so when it talks about, you know, these foreign objects going into your nasal cavity, they don't even get into, like, what those objects are, which is again one of my frustrations because there are studies that link lead exposure and lead poisoning to Alzheimer's because of it going into your brain. And it was specific to the overproduction of this protein that they talk about in these nose picking articles that they just completely leave out. And is that by design? You know, like that kind of stuff. But that's where it's just that frustration of people are in the dark because they're meant to be in the dark. You know what I mean? Like certain people want people to be in the dark. And again, just that headline, that catching headline of the absurdity, really, that nose picking causes Alzheimer's. Like, no,
that's a really viral thing to share. Like, we're talking about it right now because like it's so ridiculous, you know?
Yeah.
It sounds so ridiculous. And it's so decontextualized because that's what news typically is. Because if the news is fully contextualized, it's not
they all just
very
copy and paste too. None of them have an original idea anymore. Every headline is
harder to consume.
Verbatim.
If it's really complicated, it's going to be really hard to consume. And no one's everybody wants to share a soundbite. They don't want to share the entire drawn out reality because it becomes a dissertation rather than nose picking causes.
Welcome to my TED talk.
Dementia.
This is where I'm like, why I'm bringing this up is because we have these things with misinformation, misleading stuff, because it's eye-catching, because it catches your attention, right? And that's why I love the products you're putting out, specifically that spray, because it's utilizing that concept, but for a good cause. You know what I mean? Because it's like, you're using the mechanisms of that, of attention grabbing and instant and all that. But it's instead of this misleading nose picking causes Alzheimer's, you're actually using it to be like, watch me detect lead. And then now you can do it too.
Wild. And that's what really got me like super into this, you know, because I saw that there was a easy avenue to get people's attention on this.
Mm-hmm.
And like the swabbing, like I would have to jump out of a plane to make swabbing exciting.
You might have, now I'm going to put that as a challenge if you start doing commercials for your product.
Yeah.
It's like those used car salesman commercials, you know?
That are so extreme, yeah.
They're just so insane.
You have to make it extreme for people to watch, but the swab is just not, it's just not exciting.
It's not,
the spray is so, and it's so much better too. Like this bottle, Like, there's probably like 500 or more tests in this bottle. There's
That's
only
the biggest
30
thing.
Tests.
It's not one test.
Yeah, and this will be like $50 when you get it from me.
Yeah.
This is $18 and you have 30 sprays. Yeah. So for 20 times more, it's like double, just like four times the price.
Yeah.
So it's like five times cheaper. And this right now is 50 cents a swab. Mm-hmm. So it's about 10 cents a test with this. And so that's...
And it doesn't expire, awesome. Correct? Like, that's something where it's like, you can keep this in your house and you don't just have to use it once and be done with it.
I mean, it probably could expire eventually, but I don't think it could. Like, I've the one I'm going to use for the manufacturing, I've been keeping at 150 degrees Fahrenheit for like 2 weeks now.
Okay.
And like, I withdraw a little bit and I test with it and mm-hmm. it always works. I think it's very stable and it should be because it's a salt.
Yes. And it's travel, like it's to go. So again, like if you, you know.
Yeah, I go everywhere with it. I always am taking it out in random places and it's quick and easy because like these, you need vinegar.
Yeah.
The 3M ones, like you need a lot of money.
Yeah, yeah.
And they don't even sell them. They literally stop selling them once.
Oh.
Yeah, they're done. Because because the market really decreased for them.
Yeah.
So they probably said, wow, this product is losing so much ground. Over the past 4 years, it's lost 80% of its sales.
Mm-hmm.
Why continue?
I get that.
They
save money
by shutting down like a big chunk of their business. They save like $1 billion a year shutting down, you know, that product line and probably like 20 other ones that weren't making a lot of money.
Well, they also had all that money from the cleanup that they had to do from poisoning everybody in the surrounding area of the 3M factory.
Yeah. They're terrible for that. Dark Water on Netflix was really good.
I don't have Netflix. I'm going to have to check that out when I visit my mom. That's
how
I get my
Dark
Netflix.
Water, Dark Waters, but it's about the PFAS contamination of, I think it was like Virginia.
Interesting. Okay. I'll have to check that out.
It was pretty insane.
Amazing. Well, I want everybody to get on this mailing list though, because honestly, you're going to want this product as soon as it's available. And I'm excited
Thank you,
to test
Andrea,
it out.
That's really nice.
Oh,
yeah,
I'm so excited
for people to do it. And I hope that if you can't afford it, let me know. I'll cut a deal with you because I don't want anybody to be like priced out of this product. Like, obviously, like, I can't just give them away. If I could give all of them away, I would. I don't even care. But I do. I'm selling them. This is what it is.
Yeah.
So, but if you have a problem with paying that, just let me know.
And maybe down the line, we can do a promo code or something, you know?
Sure. Yeah. And if you want to get one of these on Amazon and you can't afford it, buy it on Amazon. Message me. And I'll refund your purchase because I don't think that it should be something that people can't afford.
In the future, too, we are going to have you back on with Tim Pye because we did.
I'm so excited when he tries out the soil.
Yes,
He emailed me today, actually.
Oh, good.
He said he's going to try it out soon.
Yay. Okay, so tune back in the future. We'll have an episode with Tim because Tim is testing out the soil testing, and I know he was very excited. I'm very excited to see the results. He did say that he'd be recording it, so we can at least see that, too. Thank you so much for your time. That is all the time we have for today, but tune in for the next episode of United States of Lead.
Thank you for tuning in to United States of Lead, hosted by Andrea Elizabeth. Just a quick disclaimer, Andrea is not an expert in lead poisoning, so we always ask that you take a look at our sources and read up a little bit on your own. If you're interested in advocating for lead poisoning awareness, please check out the LEAP Alliance. For more information, please visit their website at leapalliance.org.uk. That's leapalliance.org.uk. Thanks for tuning in.